Good morning, this is The Burner. I am James Butler and it is the frankly comical hour of 6:08 a.m. on Friday the 15th of November. Here is what matters today. Now the campaigns start to get really serious. Candidate nominations are in, they're signed, sealed and delivered, the manifestos are taking shape and Labour is set to embrace the white heat of technology, bringing parts of BT into public ownership and providing fast and free broadband for all. This weekend sees the Labour Party hold its Clause 5 meeting. That meeting decides what goes into the party's manifesto and is attended by various bigwigs from the Labour Party, leaders of the party, the PLP, Shadow Cabinet, the bits of the National Policy Forum and 8 trade union liaison members. In essence, it's a signing off meeting for the manifesto draft and the committee effectively goes through the draft line by line. In the past, these meetings have occasionally been quite difficult. This time around, it will mostly be activists from the campaigns which successfully passed policy at Labour conference this year who will be biting their nails. Policy on private education is only likely to make it to the manifesto as the removal of charity status of those schools. Recent statements by Len McCluskey, as well as parts of the Shadow Cabinet, makes it sound like policy on migration and free movement will be the cause of some arguments. It is, however, worth reading the runes closely on what McCluskey is saying. Back in 2016, his position was simply that free movement must end. His statement this week is that there can be no extension of free movement without significant tightening of labour law and regulation. Now that might seem like a minute difference, but it's a softening of the stance and it's one worth paying attention to. The Green New Deal is likely to do better out of Clause 5 than those two, partly because of its structure with the green investment banks, public ownership, structural transformation. That fits much more closely with many of Labour's other priorities. There will be some sticking around dates, I'm sure. Many of the trade unions are still very wary about that headline date of 2030 for decarbonisation, but I suspect most of it will end up in the manifesto. Along with the manifesto, the Shadow Treasury is working out full costings in what has come to be called the Grey Book, and that's because 2017's version accidentally came back from the printer grey. The reason this document exists is because it's simply a political fact that the Labour Party gets a harder ride in the press on economic responsibility, so in effect it's intended as a preemptive rebuttal to a tax on economic credibility. What to expect from the rest of it? That's still shrouded in secrecy at the moment, but we should expect a serious step up from 2017's programme. Some of the things that have been floated include trials of universal basic income, rigorous taxation on giant entities which pay little tax in the UK, and strategies to reduce the enormous regional inequality in Britain. Personally, I will be watching housing policy, which hasn't seen as much development under this leadership as you might expect, but the manifesto will doubtless be full of surprises. The last one was. The manifesto is important for other reasons. It carries enormous symbolic weight. A democratically decided document as opposed to the Conservative one, which is being written by a lobbyist for fracking companies and for tech giants. But it also bears a weight of political expectation. It has become common among Labour Party activists to point to the leak of the 2017 manifesto as the moment the Corbyn surge truly began, and a similar hope certainly surrounds this document. But the truth is that manifestos alone don't change things. They only become living documents when activists put flesh on policy bones with the thousands of stories, conversations and lived experience which make a vision out of the printed page. Now that is, of course, part of the story of 2017 as well. The manifesto could be especially important in 2019 though, with the Tories set to delay their launch as long as possible to minimise scrutiny, the space in the press would certainly be there for Labour to exploit. It's likely, though, that the Tories will step up their attacks during this period. They'll be pretty relentless. But that really has been the tenor of the Tory campaign this past week. And such attacks really do open them up to the question, where's your vision? Where are your numbers? What are you so scared of? I have a feeling I'm going to be using that sound effect quite a lot in the next few weeks. In any case, expect some of the shape of the manifesto to be released over the coming few days as policy trails, surprise announcements, all of this as Labour tries to turn the press coverage towards its programme. In fact, today at 11 a.m, Jeremy Corbyn will announce that Labour will bring free, full fibre broadband for all by bringing parts of BT into public ownership and creating a new British Broadband public service. That's a huge announcement, and alongside it will be a full programme laying out exactly how it's going to be paid for, including toughening tax rules on multinational corporations and capital expenditure from Labour's Green Transformation Fund. It's also, I think, an impressive, ambitious example of holistic policy, as alongside it, there is a promise of a charter of digital rights, including freedom from surveillance and rights to protect your data. People who happen to live in good broadband areas might not know this, but broadband across most of the UK is, well, terrible. This is a huge intervention which ticks all of Labour's boxes: inequality, infrastructure, ownership, and transformation. And it saves money too. It's fast and it's free. One thing John Cruddas has been right about in the past, and there aren't many of those around, is that Labour tends to win when it demonstrates that it's looking to the future. This looks like a white heat moment and is perhaps a sign of things to come in the manifesto. One significant thing coming up next week is the first of the TV debates between Boris Johnson and Jeremy Corbyn. I've long wondered about the wisdom of Johnson doing these, though it certainly, of course, didn't help when Theresa May ducked out of hers. But Johnson is uneven and he often misjudges his public appearances. You can see that in Yorkshire this week and in Somerset yesterday. There will be lots of intense preparation of the leaders for those debates, of course, but they matter for other reasons as well. Now the nomination deadline is passed, postal ballots will begin to go out. Conventional wisdom says that postal voters are often already pretty secure in their choice, more so than other voters, but that's not very certain. What is known is that a lot of them vote pretty early. So although it's relatively early in the campaign, these debates are a key opportunity to shift preferences. 18% of the electorate opted for a postal ballot last time, and 85% of them returned them, much higher than the national turnout of 66%. On the debates, of course, Jo Swinson is furious at her exclusion, despite the improbability of her walking through Downing Street on December 13th. She is mounting a legal challenge, which I would be amazed if it amounted to anything, but it does perhaps exemplify the Liberals' "can I speak to the manager" style of politics. The Brexit Party yesterday announced that it would keep its candidates in the running in Labour Tory marginals with Labour incumbents. That comes after pressure from Tory grandees and wider Brexit movement forces attempted to cajole, coerce, or simply threaten them out of standing. The right fears that this might split their vote and keep those Labour incumbents in place. Jo Swinson yesterday promised the world in general and the Financial Times in particular that she wouldn't put Jeremy Corbyn in number 10, and that rather than support him, she'd go straight back to the country in another general election. Now, it's quite hard to believe that she would actually do this, not least because it raises questions about the January 31st Brexit cliff edge. So the question is what she's playing at. In part, it must be that she knows that many of her target seats are Lib Dem Tory marginals and that any softness on Corbyn might deter soft Tories. But in part, I think it's a genuine loathing and antipathy for Jeremy Corbyn in particular and socialism in general. It can be said of the Tories that ideologically they tend towards whatever dominant form of capitalism exists, but they're also willing to flex that commitment with opportunism wherever necessary. Their real commitment is to power. But for the really paid up, true believer neoliberals, you've got to look at the right of the Lib Dems. Still, the prospect is intriguing. The last general election conducted in December just under a century ago also resulted in another election the year after. So in the event of a hung parliament, general election 2020, I'll set my alarm clock. Doubtless this weekend, we'll see campaigning throughout the country as all the parties turn out to canvass, lobby, or just throw leaflets at passers-by. But Labour, in particular, will be looking to mount a strong operation this weekend, especially as weekends are where concentrations of activists can decamp to marginal seats. Earlier this week, John McDonnell urged Labour Party members to use the digital tool My Campaign Map to figure out where's best for them to campaign. I'll personally have my eye on marginal seats like Southampton Itchen and Norwich North. Momentum is organising unseat events in Broxtowe and Stevenage over the weekend, and a mass canvass in Penistone. That will be the first opportunity to see whether that British broadband plan has really cut through. What else is going on today? The Brexit Party versus Tory feud looks set to continue with allegations that CCHQ offered peerages and jobs for candidates to stand down. The Tories have denied this with good reason, because presumably it would be illegal under Section 107 of the Representation of the People Act. But that conflict will doubtless continue as Nigel lashes out as his party collapses around him. The IFS has had a bit of a tantrum about minimum wage rises, a real message from the better things aren't possible side of the think tank world. John McDonnell is in the prime slot on the Today programme at 8:10. The issue of the day, I just think there's no way that British Broadband isn't going to own the conversation. To be honest, I'd really expect the right to go completely and utterly round the twist on it. Today, you can hear me talk to Anne Pettifor on the economics, ecology and the Green New Deal. That's on Novara FM, on Resonance FM in London at 1 p.m. and online shortly thereafter. And the burner doesn't come out at weekends, so tomorrow I'm actually going to get some sleep, but we'll be back on Monday. And as we go on producing the briefing, I really, really, really want to hear from you. Tell me all about the issues, campaigns and mobilizations going on in your part of the UK. I've had lots of great ones through in the last couple of days, and they'll be working into this broadcast as we go along. So just send those along to me at james@navarramedia.com or tweet them on the hashtag #TheBurner. That's it. This is The Burner. I'll see you on Monday. Have a great weekend. This broadcast is brought to you by Novara Media. Go to support.novaramedia.com.